Broadcasted live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Today being the 24th of September, Heritage Day, we thought we should have an interesting conversation on heritage. But this time around, our conversation is around decolonizing education. And I know we've had this conversation before where there was a lot of noise. You remember fees must fall, and roads must fall and so on. Where there was a call by students in particular to decolonize education in university. Well, Dr. Sibongile Masuku, who is a senior lecturer in culture and heritage studies at the University of Mpumalanga, is saying, well, that's not enough. You know, in fact, this conversation should take us to decolonizing education, even at the lower levels of education, at primary school, at foundation level. That's where we need to start. Dr. Masuku, thank you so much for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening.
You make a very compelling argument about you cannot be starting decolonizing education at a university level. You probably have to start at foundation level. Give me your take on that.
Yes, it's very important that it started at foundation level because there's a lot of learning that happens in the home context. And this learning is not transported to the formal education setting. And the other thing is teaching, formal teaching is treated as if it does not exist in a community. It's treated as if it's an island in space. Teachers go to school and they become different people. Children go to school and they become different people. They do not take what they've learned from home to the school context. And teachers separate their roles from being teachers, from being societal people.
You know, you make such an interesting point because in a way, what you see us doing in the current situation, and I know some of these issues will come up with the Bello Act, but in a way, what we do is to erase the learnings of children from home when you step into the classroom. You almost want to reprogram them and erasing knowledge that they already have from home, which for me, I think is part of the problem.
Yes, definitely. It's part of the program. For instance, if you look at the research that I did, and the teacher would ask, in a textbook, will ask the child, how many legs does a cow have? And the child will say two legs, because the image is one-dimensional. It shows two legs. And the teacher will fail the child. And the child would say, we learn about cattle, but it's not real cattle because the one we learn about at school has two legs. So these are some of the problems that contribute in children being declared as not being competent or not intelligent or whatever one labels them. But it's because the reality of the home and the reality of school are compartmentalized as different.
There are many other things that form part of education that could make it easier. And you speak of not just language, for instance. It's everything. It's how what we consume. It's the landscape. It's the community we come from. And so when you start teaching the curriculum, for instance, with, for instance, let's say vegetation that they've never seen before, as opposed to vegetation that they're familiar with in their backyards, very different in how children can take it in, because what's indigenous to them, what comes naturally to their environment, they would be able to digest better than learning about snow, for argument's sake, that they've never seen. Now, maybe this is a different time because there was snow last week, but you understand what I mean.
Yes, yes. You know what? I think one of the most important aspects that we miss up, which has been taken up by the Bella aspect, Bella Bill, is that language is a window to a lot of our skills, practices, and attitudes. For instance, if you look at Zulu, Zulu as a language has lots of idioms and lots of proverbs which summarize some of the realities that we deal with on an everyday basis. For instance, one of the idioms is hope does not kill, which basically means it's one idiom that addresses issues around depression. Because if you have hope that things are going to better, your will to live is even stronger. So there's a lot that is packaged in the languages that we could use to address some of the issues that we're dealing with as a society and to encourage better ways of living. I think the other issue that is also particularly important when we look at decolonizing, for instance, education, is the importance of intergenerational learning. Because when you look at colonial education, it's very much a top-down process, while intergenerational learning allows for learning across boundaries that colonial education has implemented, because traditional education had some kind of an osmosis that allowed and collapsed the boundaries of knowledge. Colonial education has created boundaries of knowledge. Traditional education had collapsed boundaries of knowledge.
Yesterday, we had a conversation with Eleanor Sisulu, who we were discussing the Ngu language. And right now, the main custodian of that language we all know now is Auntie Katrina, who has no real formal education, but is the custodian of the language Ngu. But, you know, the kind of way in which society receives someone like that is not the same as someone who is, for instance, a professor in Oxford who actually does not know the language indigenously but has learned about the language, and we then give more recognition to that person. We need to start there, don't we? Where we take away the barriers of who can be an educator. Not because there's a piece of paper that comes from a structure that was constructed by somebody called a university, but because this person actually can give us a lot of knowledge and insights.
Yes, there's another issue about that, because we tend to say those national treasures, people that we call treasures, the encyclopedias of knowledge that are walking on two legs, we tend to say they must come to the classroom. But we also must have in situ education and go to the mountain instead of expecting the mountain to come into the classroom, because the in situ education is much more contextualized. People will see, for instance, Esther Mahlangu doing the painting in a context that is relevant and a context that is going to empower her, rather than her going to a university to do the paintings. So one is learning in context, which is much more, makes much more sense than taking this elderly lady to a university. She's very terrified. It's a context that she's not performing. She's going to work comfortably. It's not her surroundings. So we need to humble ourselves and do in-situ learning rather than demanding that the elders come into our classrooms.
Well, you make a very good point, because one of the other things it does, it immediately changes the power dynamics. You are now coming to them, seeking their knowledge. They're not coming to you, begging you to accept their knowledge, in a way.
Yes.
I want us to talk about how we have lost some of the gains that you say we had made with, for instance, being able to have conversations within the classroom, mobilize, fees must fall, you know, all the activities that were happening before COVID, how us having to sit back at home and not engage person to person has taken away some of the gains.
Yes, you see, it's a pity that the conversation about decolonizing the curriculum has quietened down. But we, particularly as researchers working with heritage, for instance, I'm here right now in the Comoros, and we're looking at art education and the importance of art education. And art and education is a very important aspect that is non-intimidatory for children to communicate. It's a decolonized way of expressing oneself. For instance, let me say now, one very important aspect of research is the fact that when we go out and do research, we have something that is called confidentiality. And that is problematic because those knowledge holders, we decide now that there must be a confidentiality clause. They are not acknowledged. Their knowledge is not acknowledged. And we subsume their knowledge because we said we don't want to put them in danger. I've done research where elders have said, I want to see my name in that report. I want my grandchildren. They know something's called Google. They say that Google. I want my grandchildren, when they do that Google, to find my name in that Google. So let's make sure that the information that elders have is acknowledged and it gets into that Google that they want, they've heard about. So let's not deprive them of that Google.
Well, I mean, that also speaks to how institutions themselves are willing to credit who they want to credit. Again, going back to who they decide is somebody who's worthy of crediting because they don't have either a degree or so on. And maybe that's even a deeper conversation about how they recognize people we get knowledge from.
Yeah, so I think we need to challenge the issue of confidentiality. It has been there standing for a long time that they are protecting the interviewees, therefore they give them a pseudonym. People don't want pseudonyms now. They want their intellectual to be recognized. So academic institutions need to rethink the whole issue of confidentiality and seek to find out, because we just impose that, okay, we'll have the confidence. Let's have conversations with people. Do you want confidentiality or you don't want?
Yeah.
So that they begin to be acknowledged in terms of their knowledge. Another thing that I want to talk about is the issue of referencing.
Yes.
As African holders of knowledge, because we have a history of orality, we tend to become the last names in the
We've lost Dr. Masuku. We've lost her. I'm sure she's going to try and reconnect. But in the meantime, I am going to be having a conversation just now with Equal Education. You remember last week we started the conversation around the Bella Act. We didn't complete that conversation. So we're going to take it in a short while, just after my conversation with Dr. Masuku. But I think Dr. Masuku is back now. Dr. Masuku, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, fantastic. You were just speaking about referencing.
Yes, what I'm saying is, as African people, our history of writing is a very new one. However, we want our stories told, and we want to be acknowledged for telling our stories. But when we write papers, we end up getting into the ETAL section. We are author number 4. So when the paper is published, it's Robertson, Brown, ETAL. So we fall off. So one way of decolonizing and acknowledging the role and the contribution of Black people is to drop this ETAL. We should not be ETAL'd. We should be mentioned in the references so that, because it's like we are being silenced as knowledge contributors, and we just become adults, which is nobody, nothing, someone else. So we need to assert ourselves and revise the whole issue of how we reference.
Dr. Masuku, to achieve half of what you are suggesting we need to achieve, it would have to begin with the educators themselves having to reprogram the educator. How do you suggest we do that?
Yes, it's very interesting because right now here at Comoros, when we're working with art education, we're also talking about educators, that actual educators are the managers of the knowledge sharing. And if we do not focus on the educators and focus on the learners, we are missing the point. So there's a lot of emphasis that needs to go to the educator, training, also training the trainers of teachers. So teaching the teachers of teachers is very, very important, because it starts with how have the teachers been trained to impart that knowledge. So if our training colleges are not training teachers that have a sense of understanding the importance of decolonizing the curriculum, we are missing the point.
Really appreciate you giving us your time, and all the best with your endeavors where you are at the Comoros. As you're saying, Dr. Sibongile Masuku is a senior lecturer in culture and heritage studies at the University of Mpumalanga. Thank you, Doc. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.